Welcome to Bizburg. I'm your host, Gary Dixon. Today's program is sponsored by John Dugos, Dugos Financial Group. And we welcome John Dugos.
Thank you, Gary. Glad to be here.
Before we start, though, we always ask the first question of a new guest to give us a little background about yourself and your business and tell our audience so we can meet you and find out who we're going to be listening to today.
Well, first of all, Gary, thank you for allowing me an opportunity to come onto your show. It's a privilege and an honor. I have been in the investment insurance industry a long, long time, going back to 1987. I'm now in my 31st year as a financial advisor. And the primary business that I work in is helping people gear up, plan for retirement. I do work in other areas, education planning for people's kids, grandkids. I also do work in the insurance industry, helping people protect their most valuable asset, their income and or their estate. But my niche, my expertise is in the areas of helping people, again, gear up and get ready for retirement planning. And again, as I mentioned, have been doing it a long time. There were very few things I haven't heard, and there were very few things that I am not able to help guide people with.
Well, why don't we start with kind of a state of the union? Where do we stand right now in our current economy?
Very, very opportune time to talk about it. And depending upon when this is aired, we're obviously working around the election day timeframe. The economy is very strong as we speak. We have record low levels of unemployment. Not to bore you all with my memory of stats and facts and figures, but I think some of them are very relevant. Unemployment now is at a 3.7% rate. And to put it in perspective, that's the lowest unemployment has been in the last 49 years. So basically, over the last five decades, it is the lowest it's been. Mm-hmm. We have great low inflation rates also, a little bit under 2.5%. So we're doing well. We have a lot of gainfully employed people, rising wages, but not high enough to have an inflationary concern. And in those types of economic circumstances, low inflation, low interest rates, it normally is a strong boom for the economy. So it's looking positive at this point. Some people may come back and say, yes, John, it's been running for a while, and it has been, but the indicators, although I'm not a magician, nor do I have a crystal ball, but the economy is very strong at this point.
Well, all we can do is know where we stand right now and maybe have some educated guess about what might happen in the future. There are always the doomsayers out there who are talking about the economy is going to crash. But overall, I would say my impression as a novice at this is simply that everything looks pretty good. Is there any reason to doubt that that won't continue for the foreseeable future?
Excellent question, Gary. I'm asked it day in and day out in my practice from prospective clients and clients that have been with me 30 plus years. Things are strong. Things are going very well. All we have to do is review our own current 401k statements, and depending upon the allocations, the stock part of your portfolio more than likely has had some substantial growth. I'm not a very political person. I look at the economy, but since President Donald Trump has been in office, the economy has been growing, and the stock market is up over 21% last year. It also had great growth also in the Obama administration during his 8 years. But to your point, is there anything significant that is saying that the economy shouldn't continue? I would say no, but, and again, it ties back into what may occur. If we have any life-changing event, i.e. the horrific circumstances going back to 9/11, we were in a relatively strong point at that point. Mm-hmm. 9/11 hit and the stock market had major corrections and also helped, unfortunately, stage a pretty strong recession between that 2001 and 2 period. We had a strong economy basically from 2003 to 2007. And then all of a sudden there were some disparaging comments and concerns with the mortgage industry. And then all of a sudden the stock market had a significant correction, not mm-hmm. a correction, a crash. 2008, the market lost about 37% of its value defined by the S&P 500. So things are looking strong. Back to our point, you never know going forward. But we're in the strong growth period, but any major economic news can unfortunately, at least temporarily or even more temporarily, derail it for a while. But we're still headed in a strong direction.
So I guess it really all comes down to investors and how they feel at any moment. It's kind of an emotional roller coaster, isn't it, that drives the market?
Undoubtedly. The stock market born back in 1792, it was born. And if you look at a trend, the stock market has always risen. If I had a chart and a graph, and I was on television at the moment, I'm on radio instead. If you drew a graph going from 1792, the stock market has always risen. But you have some pretty heavy lulls in that window. Mm-hmm. And the lulls, unfortunately, as you stated very clearly and correctly, is an emotional event can drive this thing down. When I guide clients and I sit knee to knee, elbow to elbow across from them, I tell people very realistically and very logically, it's easy for me to be logical. It isn't my money. I'm looking at you who can be emotional attached to your investments.
But we need somebody who's not emotional about it to advise us.
Undoubtedly, unequivocally do we need logical guidance, especially going through an emotional piece like the stock markets. So when I can remove some of that emotion, I can tie logic, I can tie a pragmatic long-term approach. It makes the craziness of the day in and day out, volatility of the markets, the investment, the economy, all of those things, a much smoother ride.
I guess we have dovetailed into your current overview of the investment climate. So I'm guessing right now it's pretty good.
Yes, I'm still optimistic, but I also call myself realistic. I tell people all of the time, please, please, please analyze your assets, especially as you're nearing retirement. Obviously, if you're in your 20s and 30s, you can weather much more volatility because you can allow those investments much more time to recover. Mm-hmm. But if you're 2, 3, 4, 5 years out, even though we are in a strong economy like we were between 2003 and 2007, when 2008 hit, losing about 40% of your money can be very problematic. Oh, if you're retiring in the next year and you have to start taking that 401k and actually withdrawing it. So analyzing, reviewing, and allowing an advisor, i.e. in this case myself or someone else that has learned it and knowledgeable, who's been doing it multiple decades, who's weathered multiple storms, who can give you some great guidance, looking at your portfolio again with that logical approach.
So I'm guessing that your portfolio might be a little more conservative as you get closer and closer to retirement.
Undoubtedly. And again, very well said. The rule of thumb in this industry, as you're nearing retirement, considering to be a little bit more defensive or a little bit more conservative is very wise. A client of mine last year told me very clearly, he was around 2 to 3 years away from retirement. And he said, John, I'm on the 1 or 2 yard line. I cannot afford to blow it at this point. I'm ready to cross the end zone. I'm ready to win the game. I just cannot have a significant fumble and really impact not only my life for retirement, but also my wife's life for retirement.
I have seen some headlines suggesting some fear of inflation being a problem in the not too distant future, or a risk of inflation being an issue. Let's talk about inflation and how that might affect your current investments.
Very good question. Tying into inflation, going back, and I keep referencing this point because it was one of the most dramatic downturns actually in our history, the 2008 stock market crash. The Federal Reserve wisely, I feel, cut interest rates down. At that point, Ben Bernanke said, we're in a very problematic circumstance. So he cut interest rates to zero, basically, at that point. President Obama also did a big TARP bailout to try to get business back on track because we were in a very dire circumstance between 2008 and the stock market actually bought in March and 9th of 2009. Interest rates, inflation were basically non-existent at that point. What that did, though, Gary, is it fueled the economy comeback. It allowed people to go out and borrow at very nominal interest rates. It also allowed people with money on the sidelines to say, heck, I can't put the money in cash accounts right now because there's basically no yield. So it encouraged people to invest in the stock market at that point. Even though it just got beat up, they looked at it again long term. They said it is a good option for long term because right now short-term interest rates are so low, banks are not paying me a lot. Let's pump money back in investments that hopefully can yield going forward. And as a result of that, it did help and kickstart the economy again. The Federal Reserve is always weighing out economic growth and what is inflationary. And the stock market grew, and nor did the Fed even increase interest rates. until 2015. So they allowed this cycle of low interest or no interest rates to keep fueling the economy. I think, and I'm not an economist, I think that they've jumped in and they've slowly raised rates, but some opponents of it feel that they've done it too quickly. Since 2015, they've bumped up rates 8 times. President Trump recently made some comments that he was slightly critical of the view of the current Federal Reserve Chairman, his name is Jerome Powell, on raising them too quickly. There's always a fine line the Fed has to deal with, but their goal is to be hawkish on inflation. Their fear is if there's too much money, too much growth, inflation will kick in, and therefore housing rates will go through the roof, and it is very problematic to the economy. I feel, again, for whatever my knowledge base is they're still doing it in a slow enough pattern that it is not problematic now. And if they do pull back, as they have in the past with their interest rate increases, we should still have excellent growth going forward and not an inflationary problem. But that is a continuum that they look at day in and day out. Growth, but limiting inflation, because it is creeping up. As I may have mentioned a moment ago, inflation right now is 2.3. Mm-hmm. Just a few years ago, basically at zero.
Right. Here's a question. I hear this thing about diversified portfolios. I would assume, again, that that is obviously not putting all your eggs in one basket in case one of the baskets goes south. Let's talk about that a little bit, that how to properly diversify your portfolio. This is right, I'm sure, right in your wheelhouse of what you do for your clients.
That is one area of my expertise and an area that I'm very passionate about. Most of my clients are the hardworking dual income couples. And most of my clients, their two primary assets, Gary, are when they go into retirement, the equity in their home is historically one big piece of their asset pile, which they normally don't touch, and understandably so. But the second primary piece are their retirement assets. And that is an area, again, I have a lot of passion with. That is an area I have a lot of expertise with. And candidly, that is an area that I have the most fun guiding people with. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, looking at people's portfolios, reviewing their current 401ks, reviewing their current IRAs, most people that I sit down and talk to, the high percentage of the people that I sit down and talk to, are not based upon their risk tolerance. They are not aligned properly. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, most people look at a mutual fund, which is nothing more than a diversified portfolio that we mutually fund of stocks and or bonds or other investments. Most people feel because they're buying a mutual fund and because it's in a diversified bucket and or buckets of investments, it is diversified enough. More times than not, that's 100% incorrect. Mm-hmm. I've looked at excellent diversified investment companies, money management firms, mutual funds that have been around for many, many decades. But again, going back to that 2008 period when the stock market crashed, the stock market in essence is a herd, is a fan mentality. When a lot of the investments went down, even with these great investment companies out there, they also declined. So a lot of my clients who sit down and ask me to review their investments say, well, I'm very diversified. I believe I'm in a relatively conservative or moderate portfolio. Mm-hmm. On a scale from a 1 to a 10, I ask them, where do you think you are? And a lot of people say, I'm probably a 2 or 3 or 4, 10 being the most aggressive, 1 being money under your pillow. But once I do my analysis and show them fact, no fallacy involved, no fiction involved, but actual fact data. How much of your portfolio is in stock? How much of your portfolio is in bond as far as a diversified portfolio? A lot of these clients come out to be a 7 or an 8 or even a 9, and their mouths drop and say, wow, I had this much risk and I didn't even realize it. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the stuff I really love because I can guide them, teach them, and direct them on how to rebalance. Because regardless of the economy, if your portfolio is not diversified properly, if that economy turns again and you think you're relatively conservative and you're not, you can have a rude awakening when there is, and I will say it again, when there is, not maybe, when there is another economic downturn.
Right.
Hopefully it's later versus sooner, but it will ultimately occur.
Ultimately, it will go up and it will go down.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. If you just joined us, you're listening to Bizburg, and our guest is John Dugas, who's the owner of Dugas Financial Group. And let me give you some contact information. The website is simple, dugasfinancial.com. That's D-U-G-O-S financial.com. And the phone number is 724-327-2601. John, when people show up, talk to me for a minute about what that's like, that first opening meeting might be like.
I have clients that range from the very learned in the investment world to those that are excellent at their current profession, but really don't care a lot about the investment stuff. I would say the latter is more of the norm. They're so busy in their own lives, working, developing their own business, working, developing their own career, plus they have their own family, that they're not putting a lot of emphasis in their investment portfolio, in their analysis and review. And again, that's okay. That's why I'm here. I'm very, very good, and I say this with honesty and humility and thankfulness for what I do. Mm-hmm. But on the flip-flop, I also have a very limited skill set, and my wife and daughter can attest to it. I can't fix things. I know very little about the internet. Fortunately, I have a very learned staff that guides me through whatever we need on our system, and we have the latest computer system, which they picked out and chose with our IT guy. But my skill set is in this industry, knowing the investment world and knowing how it all ties together very effectively. So the first appointment, and I consider myself and our firm that, again, I've worked very hard on building the last 31 years as a firm that is real and that is a firm that has empathy and understanding of you and your needs. It's really easy for me to know the investments because, again, I have the love and passion. Mm-hmm. But my personality type, being understanding, having a lot of empathy, having a lot of the ability to understand what you do and don't know is very important. I'm asked all the time, John, I'm afraid to ask this question because it sounds a little bit dumb. There are no dumb questions in my industry because, again, it isn't your area of expertise. And even for those that it is their area of expertise, there's probably an area or two that I can help with because, again, everyone has a little different specialty. But tying back to your question, what do you do at the first meeting? We come down, I call it, we break bread, knee to knee, elbow to elbow, and we basically talk. I get to know your circumstances in a very informal initial meeting. And I really tell people, if you're looking at me, judge me on a few things. Judge me on my knowledge base. Judge me on my credentials. Judge me on my schooling. Judge me on my success, which I have all of the awards and all of those things to show. But also judge me and determine, do I care, which I do, and do I have an investment philosophy that is like-minded? Mm-hmm. Let me dig a little bit deeper into that. Again, I believe in growth. I believe in trying to pace your investments and try to help you beat and outpace inflation if possible. But I also want to try to protect and preserve what you have. If you are an investment person that is always swinging for the fences, to steal another athletic analogy, I'm really not your guy. Mm-hmm. And I've turned away business because although you can swing for the fences and try to find the next Microsoft before they became the Microsoft of today, or the next Amazon or Apple, I'm not that guy. The guy I am is the guy that will sit down with you, try to help build a portfolio for you, and guide you through those retirement years to take, preserve, and provide you that cash flow that hopefully will last for your lifetime. And also, if possible, leave monies left over for your heirs. First meeting, bring what you have. What you don't have, I will get in the future. I'll go through what we call a fact gathering. It's all confidential. And basically, I'll ask you a slew of questions on what I call your haves, the assets you have, and your have-nots, whatever debts you may have, and give you guidance, meetings thereafter, and develop a plan for you based upon your haves and have-nots and your goals.
I think some people mistakenly think that financial advisors are only for rich people. I know that not to be the case, and I'm sure you would agree with that. But a lot of us, I think that initial, if we've never met with a financial advisor, I think there's some fear that we're going to be embarrassed when we have to lay out our lack of planning on the financial arena, and what little we've really done and how little we really know what's happening to our money. And we have to do a confession to you, the financial advisor. Work me through that a little bit for those people who are really dreading having to share their finances with a new person like yourself.
Another very viable concern and very viable question. And I am also posed that concern over and over again. I'm not totally unique doing this as long as I have, but I'm more unique than not that there is no minimum asset size that I will help people with. There are a lot of advisors that have done relatively well, and I pat myself not on the back, but on my peers that have guided me and directed me and to help get me to where I am today, because it is a team approach. And I'm also sincerely thankful to the good Lord. He's given me the mindset for math and also the mindset to help people. But there are no minimums. So that is a very excellent question. And I really break that mystique down that you have to have so much money to even talk to an advisor. I'm posed that question all along. There is no minimum. I've helped people who have millions and millions of dollars, and I've helped people literally have $20,000 to their name, and I've also helped people have a few hundred dollars to start up a plan. So that is not a concern of mine.
Good.
And again, initially and throughout our process, not only initially, but throughout our entire planning process, you will still receive an amazing level of service, an amazing level of professionalism, regardless of your assets.
Okay, very good. I appreciate you letting us know about that, because I think that is a fear that a lot of people, before the first time they've ever met with a financial advisor, might have. In the time remaining, and we only have a few minutes, actually, retirement planning is really big. I mean, that's when people step up to the plate and start getting a little bit concerned about where they're going to be when that day comes. Let's talk about your approach to retirement income planning.
Excellent question. Also, the bottom line for most people, Gary, is when they're nearing retirement, their big concern is, I hear it over and over again, I make X number of dollars a year today. When you retire, will I have enough money? There are very few people doing this. Now I'm in my fourth decade of doing this. Very few people that I know of, when they ultimately retire, take out the same income as when they were currently working, because most people don't have that much money put away.
Right.
So what I do in the income planning mode is we look at all of the potential sources that you have, put that puzzle together, and then ultimately help guide you on an income stream. So we will do an in-depth analysis on what your Social Security would be. A lot of people say, will Social Security be here? I am confident will be. Mm-hmm. I remember when I started in the business in 1987, there were concerns that it may not be around. Here we are, again, three decades plus later, and it is there. It may be modified, but I'm very confident it will be there for a lifetime.
We will insist.
That's very, very true, too. Undoubtedly.
Right.
Social Security, I'll look at that, Gary. I'll also look at your investment portfolio, looking at providing you the term you used, income planning. Mm-hmm. It's great to have a bunch of money in the bank, but it really doesn't do a lot for you when you're in retirement, because now we need to turn on that switch and provide you an income stream.
Right.
One of the few positives that did occur with the significant stock market crash of 2001 and 2 and again in 2008 is the investment companies and the insurance companies still want to capture and develop clients, and they still want to develop assets. And what they've done very effectively is build programs and build investment options that can provide you an income that should and could last for your lifetime and ultimately last for your spouse's lifetime, if indeed you have a spouse. So I look at Social Security. I look at an income stream from your current investments. I look at any pensions, although today there aren't as many companies today providing pension plans. Most of those are self-directed pension plans from your 401ks. But I gather all of those pieces together and provide you a projection of what type of income stream you can have. And again, I say this as sincerely as I can. More times than not, when I do this analysis for retirement, more people are pleasantly surprised that they do have sufficient assets for their retirement than they ever thought they would. I hear it day in and day out, John, I don't know how I'll ever be able to retire. I make this, I only have this, but when we look at all of the pieces, most people are able to retire relatively comfortably.
Well, that's good to know. And really, isn't it all about peace of mind?
It is.
And about planning for that peace of mind. And I'm sure, yes, many people walk away from their meetings with you feeling better, not worse, than when they came in. So much to talk about. We hope that you'll join us again on the program sometime in the near future. John, thanks for sharing all the information with us. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Gary, and thank you.
The name of the company is Dugas Financial Group. The website is D-U-G-O-S, DugasFinancial.com, and the phone number is 724-327-2601. We hope you'll give them a call, and our program today is sponsored by Dugas Financial Group.
Securities offered through Fortune Financial Services Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC. Dugas Financial Group and Fortune Financial Services are separate entities.